Welcome to the Revital Health Podcast. I'm Jodie Duval, and I'm a functional naturopath in Perth, WA. This is a place where you can expand your knowledge on how to optimise your health and realise your full potential. We'll have cutting-edge information with expert guests and having lots of fun along the way. Get ready to be empowered and motivated to reach your higher vitality and find your ultimate potential. Let's go!
Revital Health is a proud member of the Health Optimization Network. Health Optimization, Medicine and Practice is a 501c3 non-profit on a mission to educate doctors and practitioners on how to optimize for health rather than treating disease. If you're interested in becoming a practitioner or donating, head over to homehope.org. We have cohorts running up to 2 times per year, and the next cohort is starting in September 2024. Revital Health Clinic is the first and only of its kind, exclusive health optimization clinic in Australia with state-of-the-art health technology protocols and personalized care, with compounded medicines made specifically for your testing individualities. To find out more, head to revitalhealth.com.au.
Welcome back to the Revital Health Podcast. And today I have back on the show for the second time, Dr. Nick Fuller. And Dr. Nick is talking to us about healthy habits and family wellness. And he is a leading researcher and clinician in obesity and weight management, holding a PhD from the University of Sydney. And he has developed effective evidence-based programs for sustainable weight loss. He is the founder of the Interval Weight Loss Program, which has supported many people in achieving and maintaining a healthy weight. And he also leads the largest weight management public service clinic at the University of Sydney and the Royal Prince Alfred Hospital. So his research focuses on understanding obesity and creating practical solutions. He is a many-time author and a speaker and a dad and improving health outcomes through education. So today we get talking about family health interventions and really the impact of healthy habits within the family unit and strategies for effective implementation. We also talk about sleep and weight management and exploring the critical role of sleep in weight regulation and overall health and overcoming food fussiness. So some practical tips for dealing with picky eaters and fostering a positive relationship with food. And also exercise and daily movement. So the importance of incorporating the physical activity into daily routines for both children and adults, and showing your kids that you are doing this too. And some long-term health strategies. So some looks at some sustainable approaches and how we can look at health and weight management, and also how we word this and how we talk through this with our children and focusing on overall wellness rather than those quick fixes. So I really hope you enjoy this. Nick is an incredible mind, full of information, and really puts it in a very easy to understand way. And I hope it inspires you and your family as well. So without further ado.
All right. Welcome back, Nick. It's such a pleasure to have you back on the show again.
Oh, thank you very much for having me back on, Jodie. Lovely to see you and to be able to talk to you again about a related but also different topic.
Yeah, I enjoyed our conversation so much last time. And obviously, obesity weight management is such a huge topic. But now our topic of today is family and family health and all the things around that. So it is such a massive topic in terms of how we are growing our bringing up our next generation and generations to come and the influences and the habitry around that. And when I was reading the book, which I'll actually show everyone because it's an incredible book. I am loving the recipes in the back, by the way. But the one thing that stood out to me, I was having a flick through when I first opened the book and I went straight to the contents page and I saw, I'll bring it up here, and I saw play every day. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I also say to my kids, to my clients, and every prescription will have a component on there, play or joy, because it's a forgotten part of why we are human.
Very much.
So I think, first of all, though, motivation for writing a book on this, let's start there.
Well, I must admit it's challenging, particularly when you have young children, to find the spare time because day to day, I work at the University of Sydney Royal Prince Alfred Hospital. Here we have Australia's largest weight management public service clinic, and we're seeing patients on, well, to help them regain control of their health and their weight. But that's one thing, adult weight management. Another side of the I guess, clinical care is, you know, helping or addressing health in the family home. We know that when we intervene at the family level through the parents, we get very, very good results. And this messaging is all about health, not weight, because we need to be able to set up our next generation to so that they don't have a lifelong struggle with their health and their weight, so that they have a good relationship with food, and not have to go through what many of us as adults are going through, and that is that ongoing weight struggle. You know, developed worlds shows that roughly 2 in 3 people are, you know, clinically diagnosed as overweight or in that obesity range. So we want to prevent that. And this translational message is about setting up the principles of healthy habits in the family home. And they are centered around, as you mentioned already, activity, but also food and sleep, because our research at the university shows that they're equally important, believe it or not. I mean, often we just talk about food and we think, oh, is it an 80-20% split between activity and food? We don't even talk about sleep. But believe it or not, it's actually about a 33% split. They are all just as important as one another. And when we're focusing on healthy habits in the family home, we need to be focusing on not just food, but also exercise and sleep, because these are the key pillars of any evidence-based lifestyle program. Sure, food is one of the most challenging things, which we can get into, but we must not neglect the others. And we need to be able to, you know, set the next generation up in the best possible way and do everything we can for the person we love most in this world, and that's our child or children.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so many things that I want to comment on this to start with, but, you know, I won't go crazy. But, you know, initially what I notice a lot with my clients is that, you know, they will eat well themselves, but then give them the kids the kids' meals and the, you know, the fried foods and the, you know, well, they only want that, you know, but yes, they only want that because that's how their taste buds, but also they're guided by you. You know, we are educating our children around this. But with the right influences and the right discussions, like I'm already seeing differences in my 12-year-old, and I have already for years now, in that, you know, little education pieces around. I remember the first time he tried hot chips and I said to him, look, you know, they're not the greatest for you, bub, and they might make you feel a bit unwell because of the oils in them and the way that they've been fried, you know. So, and I remember him going, okay, well, but I'm just going to try it. I'm like, fine. He tries it and he ate, you know, a whole packet of hot chips. That night he had the worst stomach cramps and he was feeling so sick. And he's like, oh, mommy, what have I done? I'm like, no, it's just learning, bub. You know, like you will learn from this experience. So years to come, he limits himself. Every time he has chips, he'll only have like 6 hot chips now. Because he's like, I know that's good. Like I'm going to enjoy it and I'm not going to have any more than this. So it sticks with them. It's powerful information that you can put across if you put it in the right way, that it doesn't impact them in any negative way, but also educates them in the correct way. So I love that you've written a book like this. It's so needed.
Oh, no, thank you for your kind words. It does mean a lot. I mean, look, there's no taking away from the struggle that, you know, we have as parents in the mundane environment and the efforts that we're putting in. But I guess it is important to highlight, as harsh as it may seem, that if you do see mealtimes as one of those fill them up and get them out type scenarios, as you were sort of alluding to, we are only contributing to the next generation of obesity and type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease, etc. Mealtime is one of the most important times of the day. And it doesn't matter if it's breakfast, lunch, dinner, particularly dinner from that social and cultural perspective, because they learn from what you're doing. the whole monkey see, monkey do. And we need to be able to tap into that curiosity of theirs and that want to do everything that you're doing. So what I mean by that is you've got to get them involved in the food preparation, the cooking if you can, because all kids go through this food fussiness stage. I don't care what parents tell me that their kid's not fussy. Most are, and most will go through that stage. They want to assert some sort of control over what they're eating. They want to shift or eat only a beige, you know, white bread, white rice, et cetera, diet, because, again, that's them being in control of one aspect of their life that they have some control over. Everything else, we are telling them what to do day in, day out. Absolutely. So this is why most kids are fussy. Yeah. And also we evolved to seek out certain foods. Now, we talked about this on the previous pod, but it's something that we need to work with, not against. And what I mean by this is no kids are going to sit down and eat a plate of vegetables, particularly when they're young. And you know why? Because they're those bitter-tasting, potentially toxic plant foods that tens of thousands of years ago we learned to avoid. And instead, we learned to seek out foods that were naturally high in sugar, naturally high in fat, and gorge and store those calories when they are available. So you fast forward to the modern-day environment, what does our child want to do? Well, they want to avoid the bitter-tasting vegetables. They want to leave those on the plate and tell you that they're yuck. But they will enjoy the sweet foods. They probably will love the fruits and want to eat them all of the time. And they will tend to prefer more of the sweet-based vegetables, particularly if you're roasting them and bringing out those natural sugars. So anything, you know, like your carrots, which are naturally sweet, they're more likely to go towards as opposed to the bitter tasting broccoli that you're putting on their plate. So what I'm getting at is it's very challenging and most children are going to push back on what you're offering them. But this is all about being patient and persisting over time and, like I said, seeing meal times as an opportunity and getting them involved, tapping into that curiosity. Children as early as at the age of two can be, believe it or not, involved in the cooking process. It might be breaking off basil from the stem to chuck into the recipe. Whatever it might be, you need to get them involved, getting them to choose recipes with you, getting them to meal plan so they feel again in control, getting them to do simple tasks when you're cooking, getting them to set the dinner table if they're old enough, and then most importantly, the mealtime principle of healthy parents, healthy kids, sitting down together as a family. Now, we know from our research that dinners in front of the TV or in front of the screens last less than 10 minutes, usually about anywhere between 4 and 7 minutes, and then often accompanied by poorer food choices, fast food, processed food. But a meal at the dinner table all together can last anywhere from 15 up to 40 minutes, depending on the age of your children. You're engaging together. They're seeing you eat the meal that's presented to them. They're more likely to try it. And over time, more likely to, you know, enjoy those meals you're presenting. There is so much to the food, I guess, principles and food challenges, but that's like a high level overview of what we're trying to encourage people to do to overcome that biggest challenge being food fussiness.
Mm. And I think constant exposure and awareness of what is out there. And you know, I remember having children in the clinic here and mentioning to them, you know, like, what sort of foods do you enjoy? You know, do you like blueberries? Do you like raspberries? And they're like, yeah, I love them. And they come from those packets, those like chewy things. I'm like, no, not the raspberry lollies, like the ones off the bushes. Oh, they're grown on bushes, are they? I'm like, oh my goodness, like, where are we as a society where we don't even realize where our food's coming from? So I think like foraging and going out and picking foods, and you know, it just brings a whole new dimension to the ability for the comprehension and awareness and beauty of what we have available to us in foods. You know, there's so much discovery that parents can do with their children. I think it's just incredible.
Yeah, that's such an important point that you make. And this is about, remember, reaching for nature first, getting children to understand and educating them on food and what it offers to our body. Again, getting them involved in the process, whether it's growing food, picking food, cooking that recipe, allows them to appreciate that. And during the first 2,000 days, you know, from birth or conception through to 5 years of age, it's their brains are even more malleable. It's very easy to wire them towards nature's treats as the default option. They don't know any better. That's what they're presented. That's what they're always going to go to. Now, parents with older children, you know, still, it's still very positive. Remember, an adolescent's brain is still evolving and developing, and you can still rewire their brain back to nature's treats. It just requires a little bit more patience and persistence. And it's not about cutting out all foods altogether. Remember, this is all about forming lifetime habits and enjoying the food environment for what it is, but not having those processed and fast foods as an everyday occurrence. It's about having the nutritious nature's treats, you know, the berries, papaya, the nuts and seeds, foods that you were mentioning as the go-tos, and the treat foods as the once to maximum twice a week occurrence, as opposed to what they currently are, which is the everyday occurrence. So look, if you've got young kids, it's even easier because you're sort of guiding them towards nature's treats from day one. They're still going to go through a food fussiness stage, but they will grow out of that. And if you've got children, parents of, or if you're a parent of older children, it's still, the research is still very positive. You can get change. It's just a little bit more challenging. And you need to persist with these healthy habits over time. And remember, what we're trying to do is make it simple for you in the time poor environment. This is not about cooking separate meals for everyone. Sure, there might be intolerances and allergies and different things you're dealing with different family members, but still catering for the whole family with one meal. And then the last point on that is that, remember, children are extremely good at regulating their appetite. They are so good at regulating their calorie intake throughout the day. So if they sit down and they're not hungry at a particular meal, we never force or bribe them to eat. They may not be hungry. They may have already had their calorie quota for the day. And if you can get them to try a particular, particularly if it's a new food or a new recipe, that is huge success because they're moving towards acceptance. And if they don't like the food, that's fine. But also realize that they're not necessarily going to accept it on the first occasion. The research shows that it can take up to seven different tries before they will enjoy or taste that meal, which might mean that's a lot of carrots on the floor.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of tantrums. And it can also be a reevaluation of what they're eating throughout the day. Now, I know with my kids that pre-dinner snack can turn into a snack the size of dinner.
Very much. If you're going to get them, if you're going to more likely get them to eat at the evening meal, which is a time when they're shattered, particularly if it's a day after school or daycare, look, you've got to try and avoid snacking for 1 to 2 hours before to you know, give yourself every possible chance of success at that dinner time, at the dinner time, at the dinner table together.
Yeah, this is perfect. Like my daughter last night, like she was eating a lot when she got home from school, and we got to dinner time. She's like, "I'm not hungry." I'm like, "Well, I've just made you dinner. Like, are you gonna eat your dinner?" She's like, "I'm not hungry." My husband said, "Oh, yeah, I think she ate her quota before dinner." I'm like, "Oh, wrong food."
And it's frustrating. It is, yeah, and it's something that sometimes we do need some hard and fast rules around, just to try and, you know, set yourself up for success at that meal time without. Because otherwise they are going to give you the hard no. Yeah. They're going to tell you they're not hungry. And look, more than likely they're not hungry because, again, they've had their calorie intake across the course of the day. They're very good at regulating their appetite, and this is why we should never force or bribe our child to eat. All it does is create unhealthy associations with certain foods. And look, we may have been brought up to – and taught to eat everything on our plate before we leave the table, but that's not something we should be pushing onto our children.
I totally agree with you. So, you know, all of this brings me back to the documentary that was done, the Overfed, Undernourished, and it really puts into perspective, and I use the example a lot, is that, and I was going to, you know, my next question was, How do we deal with the addictive nature of the foods that we're eating? Because the kids are none the wiser. They don't have the prefrontal cortex, reasoning behind this food is designed to be addictive. And it's not giving us anything. So therefore our body is requiring more and craving more because it's not getting the proper nutrient and nutrition from the foods that they're eating and craving. Yeah, so I guess this brings me to the point of, what are we looking at? What's the statistics and what's the doom and gloom, and then we'll go to the what we can do about it. But what are we looking at? Like, what's the crazy statistics that we've got with children at the moment?
Yeah, it's probably one of the most challenging things we're up against too, and that is food in the modern day environment. I mean, if we go back, a few decades. Processed food, fast food wasn't on every corner of every block.
No.
Most of us were pretty good at regulating our weight and keeping within a healthy weight range, particularly before the 1950s. And what I mean by that is the homeostatic regulation of our appetite kept us within a healthy weight range. So you're getting these signals sent from your stomach, appetite hormones produced from your stomach like ghrelin, acting on your brain, telling you when and when you shouldn't eat. Mm. Now, the problem we have, as you just alluded to, in the current environment is these addictive-like foods, processed, packaged, fast foods, actually kick in or trigger the hedonic reward pathway. So what that's doing is overriding the homeostatic regulation of our appetite. So this is why we can always say yes to the dessert, even though we've just had dinner, because we see that food, we remember what it tastes like. Dopamine is released in the brain, the learning chemical, telling you to go and reach out and have more of it. It's the same sort of thing when you walk past the bakery, you smell and see the food that's presented, dopamine's being released. Again, that learning chemical telling you to go and purchase some more of those favorite treats. Now, that's unfortunately disrupting our appetite regulation, and it means that most of us have a very hard time regulating our appetite because we keep going back for more of this addictive food, and we end up eating far too many calories that are nutrient poor but energy dense, and consequently our waistlines are growing by about 0.5 to 1 kilo every year. So as parents, this is really the biggest challenge. Our kids scream out for the stuff because they're seeing it marketed. They're seeing it, whether it's at school with their friends, et cetera, et cetera. It's in front of them all the time. And after all, it does taste good. It may not make you feel good after consumption. It's not nutritious, but it does taste good at the time of consumption, and they're remembering that. So remember, during that first 2,000 days, up to 5 years of age, it's particularly easy to rewire that brain and form connections within the neurons that are setting you on a path towards nature's treats, reaching for nature first, offering them nature's treats all the time, the fruits in particular, the nuts and the seeds, all of those foods that are naturally high in sugar, naturally high in fat, are actually triggering and releasing those feel-good chemicals in the brain, the same chemicals that are released when you have the fast food. Or the bakery treat example that I just gave you an example of. So it's about reaching for nature first most of the time, making sure the house is surrounded by those foods and offering those as a most of the time option. And then occasionally we have our treats. We're not neglecting and telling our children that we can't have them all together, because that's only going to want them more, going to want them to want them more and have them behind our backs, etc. It's about wiring our brain to nature's treats. And again, if you've got older children, the brain is very malleable, and that hard wiring that exists is in fact soft wiring, and you can retrain your brain back to nature's treats over time, but the data shows that it takes more than 2 months to do that. So you've got to persist with these healthier choices over time. It's not going to happen overnight. And this is one, I guess, important message that, I want to get across. It's all about gradually forming habits, and it's not about following the all or nothing approach. We know that doesn't work. We've been doing that for the better part of 5 decades, particularly when it comes to weight management for adults. We diet, we go through this vicious yo-yo dieting cycle of weight loss followed by weight regain. The same can be said for trying to form healthy habits, trying to overcome the addiction to certain foods, the emotional and comfort eating that we're dealing with. It's about forming these habits, but being patient and persisting with them over time. It becomes easier and easier, just like a muscle that you're training and strengthening over time. That's how you have to sort of think of it. Those neuronal connections in the brain are getting stronger and stronger as you're eating and offering more of these nature's treats.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an expensive, my household loves raspberries. So every time we go to the movies, I will buy like a whole punnet or two of raspberries. And that's our nature's treat. But as soon as I bring a raspberry packet home, I look in the fridge literally 5 minutes later and it's gone.
And at the current cost, that would be a very expensive enterprise.
$7 a punnet. I need my own raspberry bush.
I think that, you know, it's important to also highlight that this is where frozen foods can come into play and offer a more cost-effective solution. Snap frozen at the time of picking and still nutritionally similar but more affordable, because, you know, after all, not all of us are in that. We want to be going down that healthier food route, but we need to work with what's in season and buy what's in season. Otherwise, it does become quite unaffordable.
That's right. So, you know, I guess with, you know, children and the habitry, and I think that's, you know, a really important topic that we still need to continue on. But, you know, what are the rates of, children and obesity, disease state, you know, food related, nutrition related disease states, which we can, you know, can say most things are. But what are we looking at in terms of the population at the moment, you know, even just Australia?
It's a staggering 1 in 4 people, 1 in 4 children are unhealthy, broadly speaking, overweight, clinically diagnosed as overweight or in the obesity range, and have complications or metabolic disorders related to that weight. So it could be type 2 diabetes. It could be, you know, early stage heart and liver complications. So it's quite scary when we think about it. And this is why we do need to intervene at that family level. We know that we get good results when we're intervening at the family level and starting early and setting up that next generation for success so that they do not have an ongoing struggle with their weight and their health, like many of us do as adults. Because when you look at the adult statistics, 2 in 3 tick that box of overweight, obesity, or metabolic disease. So that's quite scary. More than 66%, in the developing and developed worlds, in Australia, US, are struggling and they're not ticking that, you know, bill when it comes to health. So again, it's not then going, okay, my health's out of control, my weight's out of control, go and follow an all or nothing approach, which we typically do. Go and sign up to the latest and greatest diet. This is about forming habits and following evidence-based care and lifestyle intervention that's based on the 3 key pillars of food, exercise, and sleep, because remember, these are just as important as one another, and we're often neglecting things like sleep, or we think that food's just as important as exercise, so exercise is not really factored into our day-to-day plan, but they're just as important as one another. And you need to be addressing all of them when it comes to the family household.
Absolutely. And I still see picky eaters as adults quite often than I would like to see as well. So these sorts of things can go on for forever, for into
most adults. Definitely.
Not just obesity, but the actual choices of our foods as well. So, you know, I'd love to touch on the other pillars now, and then we can come back to some more, you know, some good things that we can implement and some good tips. And obviously reading the book, it gives you all of those in there. But even I was very impressed by, you know, early baby-led weaning comments and, you know, breastfeeding and pregnancy. You know, it all adds up. You know, so it all has an impact on the child, on the family, and in all stages of our family life, and then into adulthood as well. So, you know, I love that you've also covered those areas in here. But let's sort of move into, you know, sleep first, because we've not commented on or talked about that yet in any podcast with you. So let's go through sleep and some of the, you know, even research around timing, because I know a lot of kids go to bed, including mine, later than they should, and don't get enough sleep. And it, as you say, it's important for the regulation and even the appetite regulation and glucose and, you know, all these things. So,
yes, and often, as you say, the neglected piece of the puzzle. Now, why is sleep so important? Well, because we know that when you're sleep deprived, and this is after just one night of sleep deprivation, so when we put our participants in our sleep lab at the University of Sydney RPA Hospital, we subject them to, you know, less than 7 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
They wake up feeling hungrier. Now, this is not just a subjective feeling. We take bloods, so we've got an objective measurement, and we measure appetite hormones again, like ghrelin, the one released from your stomach, acting on your brain, telling you when to eat. And guess what? After sleep deprivation, ghrelin levels surge. So you're feeling hungrier after a night of deprived sleep or not enough sleep. But we also know that it's not just that. You're more likely to make poorer lifestyle choices because of the sleep deprivation. You're less likely to feel like exercising and engaging in physical activity because you're lethargic, tired, and it's the last thing you want to do. You're also more likely to go to the vending machine or the corner store because it's the easier default option as opposed to meal preparation and reaching for nature first and looking for that high when we're sleep deprived. So sleep deprivation has a huge flow-on effect, and it has that flow-on or instant effect after just one night of sleep. So we get stuck in this cycle where, you know, our kids are not getting enough sleep, we're not getting enough sleep, we're waking up sleep deprived, making poorer lifestyle choices, and then we're stuck in this vicious cycle. Now, the next part of that is, why is that happening? Well, it's largely due to the devices that we're addicted to. They are keeping us up all night, they're making it hard to fall asleep, and they're making it hard to stay asleep. And what I mean by that is the tablets, the phones, the TVs, any sort of screen that's emitting this blue light is basically suppressing melatonin production in the brain, telling us it's daytime instead of nighttime, that it's sunrise instead of sunset. Now, that's why you fall hard. That's why you have such a hard time falling asleep. And same with your children, because their brains don't know any better. Melatonin production has been suppressed. So what we're getting you to do in this instance, again, with healthy parents, healthy kids, is implement practical tips. So the first one is, you've got to restore your relationship with screens. So when you get home from your day's work or parenting or whatever it is, the first thing you need to do is put your screen away, put the phone away, tuck it away in a drawer or whatever it might be, and leave it there, because monkey see, monkey do. If your children see you on that phone, what do they want to do? Well, they want to have the phone. They want to be in control of the phone, or they want to use their phone. So, you know, role model good habits. And then the second thing is, you've got to carve out a block of time before bed every night where we're not using screens, okay? Now, for younger children, it's much easier because you can sort of have hard and fast rules where we're not using screens for 2 hours or 1 hour before bed. Minimum 1 hour, up to 2 hours is what we're working towards. For older children, it's about, I guess, working out a plan in conjunction with them so they're feeling control. But you've got to stop using those screens and allow yourself, allow your brain to know it's nighttime instead of daytime. Okay, so that means you've got to replace that old habit with a new habit. So we're now no longer using screens and sitting around not talking to one another on our phones or TV or whatever it is. Instead, we're engaging with one another. It's family time. It could be going for a stroll together. It could be learning a new hobby, engaging in a hobby. It could be helping them with their homework, whatever it might be, but moving away from that current routine where we're stuck scrolling, looking at phones and devices the minute before we're going to bed.
It's you know, as you're saying that, it's a huge problem, and a lot of parents, and it's back to the piece of the the foods and the addictive type foods that we're having, we've now also got to contend with the addictive type screens and the games and the gaming. It's an epidemic in itself. And I say this from personal experience too. It feels like a constant conversation that I have, you know, 10 times a day with both of my children. Get off the screen. You don't need to be on it. Get off the TV. You don't need to be on it. Choose a different type of food. You don't need to eat that food. So as parents, as caregivers, as carers, you have to be constantly on the ball, fighting up against a system that's pushing it in the other direction. And it's exhausting because we've also got our own things that we're doing and work that we're doing and activities and looking after and blah, blah, blah. There's lots of things that we're doing at the same time. So, you know, it's tricky. You have to be consistent in your ways of approach, not just nagging. And this is just what I'm in a lived in experience at the moment. It's just really relentless, you know, and I've now come to the point where I'm like, oh, isn't that interesting? The power's just gone off. You know, we had a bit of a storm last night. So boom, off the main switch. Oh, candles, guys. Isn't that so good? Like, oh gosh, annoying power. We have to turn this TV off. But my 12-year-old's like, yeah, mum, yeah, okay.
if only that happened every night.
Exactly, yeah. But, you know, turning the power off can be a situation that you can get yourself into, but it will smarten up eventually. But, yeah, so I think it's the solutions. You know, we know the challenges are real and also the awareness of the challenges, because I think a lot of parents in front of me don't actually realise it's not normal to not be on a screen. You know, they will just be like, oh, well, they just go to the shopping center and I just go here. And, you know, I'm sitting in a conversation with them here in the clinic and they've got the iPad out and like, that's just all normal. I'm like, no, I want to interact. Like, I want to talk to them. I want to actually see them and spend time with them. So it's where almost still a lot of adults are unaware that is a problem. And I think, so that's the biggest part is education, but then solutions. Yeah. It's a tricky one.
Exceptionally tricky. It's probably, and again, it's just as tricky as navigating the food environment. So, you know, you've got to start slow and steady. It's not a complete overhaul. Trying to find one of those practical tips that work for you in your household, depending on the age of the children. But we do know that even carving out a section of time before bed where you're not using screens significantly improves sleep health. And you're going to find that your children and you will be better rested and wake up less likely to have the tantrums, et cetera, more likely to, you know, sit down, enjoy that breakfast meal, which is the most important meal of the day. So, yeah, it's not easy. They're intertwined in our lives. It's not going anywhere, technology. So we've got to embrace it pretty much like the food environment. But again, restore our relationship with screens, because like you said, it's leading by example, role modeling. They are watching your every move, whether you think so or not. Monkey see, monkey do. You have to set that example. And that example, again, is not be seen scrolling and giving them your full attention, even if it's in the bath or in the shower, whatever it might be, at the dinner table in particular, everything's got to be turned off. That is a time where you are interacting with your children and or partner if they're present. So, yeah, it's for some families it's much easier, and others we find that's the most challenging, being screen and sleep health. But again, why it's got to be addressed and why it's a key part of, you know, healthy parents, healthy kids, screens, food, exercise, remember, a third, a third, a third.
Yeah. And the exercise piece, you know, a lot of the physical activity is downplayed because of the gaming and the, you know, inability to come away from the screens and then go outside and move and just get normal sunshine, you know, just be a normal, healthy human. So, you know, I think it's, you know, from a perspective of what I'm hearing as well, it's just small steps. It's constant, you know, keep going with it. Don't feel disheartened and stop. And, you know, just small little baby steps and input really good, almost religious ceremonies around these sorts of things. So you can then be teaching yourself and also your children. So these are important parts of ongoing routines, part of the family home.
Definitely. And remember that they're always going to be pushing back. You're not alone. All children, all teenagers, they're all doing this in different ways. They're trying to assert some sort of control over their life. And even young children, particularly young children. You know, we gave an example around the food and the food fussiness and why they will tell you it's yuck and they're going to push back and say, I don't like it. Not just from an evolutionary point of view, but from a control point of view. Same can be said for screens. But again, it's about role modeling. It's about breaking those behaviors with new positive behaviors. So if you find everyone sitting around on screens, well, suggest something that's a positive habit. And that might be getting them outdoors to engage in physical activity, okay, as something that is breaking that usual routine. Because over time it does get easier, but you're always going to have these sort of little setbacks or feel like setbacks, particularly as they're pushing back, and they're going to continue to push back even with a success.
Yeah, you have such beautiful tips and tricks there. It's I don't think this is spoken about enough as well. I don't hear this often, and maybe I don't listen to enough parenting podcasts, but I think most parents, if not every parent, will have these challenges, and it can feel quite alone, doesn't it? I mean, when you think, oh gosh, these kids are driving me up the wall, you know, they're the only ones that are doing this. Is all kids like this? But you're right. All kids are.
They are. We think it's our kids, and that everyone else has got it, you know, picture perfect. But that's not the case. Don't be harsh on yourself. Don't be too hard on yourself. You're doing a fabulous job as a parent. It is so hard in this current environment. But just keep remembering it's all about health. And not only will you see improvement in your family health and your health, but you're setting everyone up for a lifelong positive relationship with food, activity, and sleep/technology.
Absolutely. And with the physical activity piece as well, as parents, you know, I think it's really important to show your children that you're prioritizing your own bodies as well. Like you say, monkey see, monkey do. So not only all the other things, and I think, you know, it comes with a given, you know, that this is also a piece in that, but to make it completely blaringly obvious, like you need to show your children that you're active and doing physical activity. You know, my kids know that mummy's off to Pilates. Cool, mum, what time you'll be back? Oh, awesome. Well, how was it, mum? You know, so they know, and they like, oh, what do you do there? So, and then they're learning, oh, that might be something I want to try, you know, later on. So I think that's also a very important point to make too.
So important. It's, again, they want to do what you're doing. Okay, so whether it might be running around the park or playing in the backyard or jumping up and down in the kitchen, it really doesn't matter. I mean, they love moving. That's something that kids want to do. They want to play. They want to run. They want to be with you and exercise with you. If they see you moving, well, what do they want to do? They want to move too. They want to do those exercises you're doing. Even if they can't be with you, they still are intrigued. Like you said, you're tapping into their curiosity. It's the same with food. When you're getting them involved, you're tapping into that part of the brain, they're more likely to try that food that's presented to them. So you lead by example, role model by example. And what I guess the focus needs to be too is intertwining physical activity into your day-to-day life. And I don't mean focusing just on structured activity, because after all, many of us are so time poor that we don't have that time to carve out every day. But as a family, you've got to, I guess, think of it as not a nice to have, but a must have. So whenever you can, if you're walking to and from school or the shops, that's part of your incidental activity. It's intertwined into your life. And then your children don't know any better. That is what they know is the norm. And then you're shaping their brain to go down that path and make sure that that is always something that's going to be part of their day-to-day life, being movement. Because after all, we evolved to move, but in the modern day environment, we barely move. We drive everywhere from A to B, and we're not getting near enough physical activity. And this is the same for children.
Yeah. And so simple to actually input, really. It just takes a little bit more thought and remembering. Yeah, absolutely. So let's get into some more practical implementation around nutrition. And I just want to, because you have so many beautiful recipes in the book, and I just want to hear some, inspiration behind those. What are your favorite things? Or what have you sort of loved to cook with kids? Some stories around that. Anything in terms of motivational implementation for nutrition, healthy nutrition habits?
Yeah, so I guess with the recipes, which is the second part of the book, you've got the first part, which is all about the six healthy principles and how to implement your family home. The recipes are then sort of breaking down some of the barriers to, I guess, the constraints with cooking. Again, because we're time poor, we don't want to be thinking about what to cook or ponder that supermarket all night looking for obscure ingredients. We don't have time for that. And also, it's not sustainable and it's not enjoyable. So it's about cooking simple recipes and making sure that they're nutritionally balanced by including a source of whole grain carb, a source of protein, and a source of healthy fat at each meal. And again, trying to get your kids involved and get them to select recipes, because if they do that, they're more likely to, try it when it actually comes to the plate. But I guess in terms of like family favorites, we always find things like a pie. Something as simple as that is always enjoyed by everyone. You can be loading it up with vegetables as well. And you know what? Most children don't even bother picking them out because it's so tasty and delicious. It's often the family favorites that you can still be cooking, but then just making sure that they are nutritionally balanced or maybe adding a spin to that traditional favorite. So instead of always cooking the spaghetti bolognese, if you want to try introducing some lentils or beans, it might be then the lentil bolognese next time. They're going to probably push back the first time. But again, if you persist over time, yeah, you never know. They might and most likely will start to love it and enjoy it. But it's about opening their mind up to more than the three or four recipes that we typically stick to on a rotational basis. It's not about cooking meals for every family member and cooking meals for every meal of the day. No one has time for that. It's about cooking one meal for the family at the evening time, using the leftovers for lunch the next day, and then really prioritizing breakfast, because remember, that's the most important meal from a metabolic point of view. And we've touched on this in the previous podcast, but we burn the calories 2.5 times more efficiently in the morning versus the evening time. But yet most of us as adults and even children tend to eat most of our food towards the end of the day. Adults run out the door, coffee, one hand, then they start to ramp up their food intake in the afternoon and end up eating most of their food at the evening meal. So that's the wrong way to orientate your food intake and why you need to be focusing on breakfast. And again, some breakfast recipes there to hopefully give some inspiration and show you how easy it can be, particularly if you're preparing the night before or as part of your meal planning for the week. And then, sorry, one other thing there, Jodie. You will find too that some of these recipes actually have QR codes, and with that, there's a cooking demonstration. Again, hopefully to try and break down some of those barriers, because, like, it's most people take for granted that, some people don't even know the basics of cooking. Okay, it's about showing them how easy it can be and starting simple and building it up over time. Because, yeah, with a little bit of, I guess, dedication to it, it does become, it's quite easy when you stick with it.
Driving a car, you just end up getting used to it, and it's like it's always been there. Yeah. Breakfast is one thing I want to sort of come back to, is that with the current convenience environment with children, because there's a lot of cereals and sugar-laden cereals, and so what, for listeners, obviously going to read your book is the first step, but kid-friendly, healthy breakfast options in generalizing, what are we looking at?
Okay, so remember again, we want to make sure it's balanced. So we're looking for a source of whole grain carb. We're looking for a source of protein. We're looking for a source of healthy fat. And if we can, some fruits, probably not vegetables, because they're most likely just going to leave them anyway. So we're working with their sort of DNA. But one example might be some whole grain oats. Okay, particularly in the colder months, you might be having a bowl of porridge as your whole grain carb. You're then using probably a source of dairy. It could be some yogurt, some milk as your protein source. Depending on age, you could be adding nuts and seeds to that as well. And then your healthy fat, again, could be a nut butter that you're mixing into it and putting some berries on top. So that is a perfect, delicious, nutritionally balanced meal that you will find, particularly if you've started from day one, kids love. Now, that's a bit harder to sort of introduce with slightly older children or school-age children than teenagers if they've had a lifelong of processed cereals. But again, you can rewire their brain, remember? But if you're starting from scratch and in that first 5 years of life, that golden opportunity, it's much easier because they don't know any different anyway, and those foods taste delicious.
Yeah.
So that's an example of where you would nutritionally see that meal as nutritionally balanced with whole grain carb, protein and fat. When you've got more time, you can be also doing cooked meals with eggs and avocado, whole grain toast, for example. So there's, you know, ample opportunities, and breakfast is usually one of the easiest meals, particularly if you prepare it the night overnight before with overnight oats.
And it's even yummier and better digestion too. Oh, brilliant. My son joked the other day, it was quite fitting actually in time for the podcast. He's like, "Mom, what were we eating? It was an omelette or a frittata or something like that." And he's like, "Mom, what else have you sneaked in here?" I'm like, "What do you mean?"
Smart.
He's like, "We know you always sneak stuff in now." And I'm like, "Really? Am I that obvious?" You're a mom, like, you have to sneak things in. I'm like, "That's pretty cute." So it's also sneaking some things in that they may not even know.
Yeah, and look, if it tastes good anyway, as I guess it's highlighted here, they're still enjoying it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He was eating it and he's like, "Okay, like, tell me, like, divulge your secrets."
Yeah.
Oh, so funny. So, okay, brilliant. So now, you know, this podcast has gone super quick. I can't believe we're here. But I wanted just to get your sort of final points of, recommendations, golden tips, maybe three or five that we can sort of step away from this and just really go, this is our focus point. This is where we really need to work with what we've got going on now. So some motivation for people moving out of that.
Sure. Look, the first one is health, not weight. Now, if anyone ever tells you that your child needs to go on a diet or you need to start restricting their food intake because they're not tracking according to a normal healthy weight range, you need to ignore that advice. It's not correct advice. If you can implement the principles of a healthy lifestyle, what we've been talking about today, in your family household, they will naturally find their optimum body weight. Anyway, so we are focusing on health, not weight, and you need to role model those behaviors in your household. If you're talking about food in a negative manner or dieting culture in front of them, that's going to have a flow-on effect, and you're going to start to see that rub off onto them as well. Now, the second one is, we did talk about this, but food fussiness. It's so important because, remember, we evolved to seek out certain foods. You're not alone. All kids go through this, despite the statistics saying that, it's probably only 50%. That's rubbish. It's more. It's most kids. Everyone does at some point.
Yeah.
And you don't be too harsh on yourself, okay? Remember that they're most likely going to avoid it on the first few occasions. You've got to keep offering these foods in variety of ways on multiple occasions. And get them involved, tap into that curiosity. If you're doing that, they're going to start to feel more in control. They're going to start to more likely try the food that you've cooked with them or presenting to them. And then over time, we'll again start to love them. And of course, you're going to find your family favorites, and they can come into your meal planning. And again, allowing them to feel in control of that meal that they're selecting for the week, or meals they're selecting. And then I guess the third and the fourth one is, remember, breakfast is so important. It's something we're neglecting. You've got to set yourself up for success. You need to focus on that as the most important meal of the day. Now, that might be the time when you actually sit down as a family and eat your family meal together, because not everyone's present in the evening time. That might only mean one parent or one caregiver or care is present. So breakfast might be that time. But from the portion size perspective, remember, it's the most important. So particularly for us as adults, it might mean we have two small breakfasts, but you've really got to ramp up your calorie intake at that time of the day. And you also got to role model that behavior by giving and offering ample food to your children at that start of the start of the day. And that goes or flows onto the screen time. Remember, sleep health is just as important. So you've got to re-establish your evening routine and develop a new relationship or a healthy relationship with screens so that you're not sleep deprived. Because if you wake up tired, your children are going to wake up tired too because they're also using the devices and screens. Everyone's going to be at one another's, you know, throats in the breakfast and evening, or sorry, morning routine. You need to prevent that. So we need to be getting good sleep. It's so important, and it's something that we're often neglecting, but often simple tips that we can implement and see quite instant success. Mm-hmm. And then remember that monkey see, monkey do, particularly with activity. If you're moving and seen to be moving and incorporating incidental activity in your family lifestyle, you're ingraining them to go down that route and that path, and know that it's not a nice to have, it's actually a must have, and it's something that we should be doing every day, because after all, remember, we evolved to move.
Yeah, we did. We've got arms and legs to do that. It's very important, powerful and practical information that you've given here, Nick, and I really appreciate your time again. And you just I just love your approach of simple, clear, and very informative, and the depth of the physiology of where you're basing your information off. So it's just so easy to understand, but also make impact of and practical application of. So yeah, thank you so much, and for the books that you write and the information that you're giving everyone too.
Thank you, Jody. Thanks for your kind words, and yeah, keep up the great work. And thank you again for having me on the podcast.
My pleasure, my pleasure. So just a quick plug. So we've got Healthy Parents, Healthy Kids. You also have many other books, and I won't list them all off here because I'll get all the names wrong. But also your interval weight loss program. So maybe just give your plug of your Instagram and website.
Yeah, so if you're struggling as an adult, our translational adult weight management program is IWL, or interval weight loss. So that's at intervalweightloss.com. It's also at, you know, Apple Store, Google Play Store is the IWL app. But remember, that's not the focus for kids, because we're focusing on health with kids and children. It's health, not weight, and the six principles that you'll find in Healthy Parents, Healthy Kids, and supplementary information that you'll find at feedingfussykids.com, including some demonstrational videos around cooking for some of these recipes.
I'm going to go check that out too. They love a good video because it's on a screen.
True.
Oh, thank you so much for your time, Nick. And until next time, and have a wonderful rest of your day as well.
Thanks again.
Thanks for listening to the Revital Health Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Revital Health, as well as our website, revitalhealth.com.au, for upcoming podcasts, workshops, and speaking events. Find out about specials happening in the clinic and all the show notes and links mentioned in the podcast. Please remember that this information discussed here is general information and is not intended to diagnose or treat individuals. Please speak to your healthcare professional before embarking on any new treatments, lifestyle changes, medicines, or supplementation to assess your suitability. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you again soon.